If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you. You've been listening to Annabelle off of Howlin' Rain's latest release, Dharma Wheel. I first met Ethan Miller, the band's frontman, a few years back, and have always found him to be quite musically eclectic and an extremely poignant wordsmith. So when I got word that this Bay Area-based musician was releasing a new record, and then heard the new record, I knew we had to chat. Here's that conversation.
I think it's your first really accessible record that you've made to date, in terms of songwriting, in terms of the playing on the record. It's just a great record. What prompted this kind of switch up in terms of songwriting and performance?
You know, I don't know. I guess I was just reading a book about the Coen brothers, and they were saying they didn't, you know, they couldn't tell one hit movie from a stinker. You know what I mean? Like, they made Fargo and it was a big hit, and No Brother Where Art Thou was a big hit. And then they'd make, you know, whatever, the Hudsucker Proxy, and it just tanked. And they're like, man, we can't tell any difference between one of these from the next. We just keep, you know, kind of following the muse and doing what seems interesting to us. And, you know, I guess the same is kind of true. The only difference being that, you know, we took quite a bit of time with this one. We road tested some of the tunes. You know, we really said, let's let this, you know, try to capture a really commanding performance of these songs. And I do think that changes the energy of a record, of course. You know, one that's rehearsed in a weekend and blasted out has a bit more of a ragged, you know, cinema verite energy to it. And one that, you know, has commanding tour tested performances, and where you really feel like you know the songs and took them to the end of the line and construction and whatnot. You know, that perhaps creates a little more of a long lasting, comforting environment to engage with. That's my guess.
Prelude is probably the only song on the record that to me sounds like a throwback to Howlin' Wolf. Like, it's unique in its delivery. And I think, you know, obviously the stuff that McDougal does on synth adds a lot to it, but it's of the six songs on the record, it's to me it's a Howlin' Rain throwback. The other ones seem so much more new and contemporary in a certain way than the others, but that's just my taste. I could be totally off with that.
That's funny. A few people have said their own take, you know, from my manager to you saying that to a few other people. And it's always a different song that they choose, that they say, like, oh, you know, you know, Jared said, oh, you know, Don't Let the Tears sounds like something that you guys have already kind of done. And this song sounds like something like that's never been done before. And it's interesting to me that, and kind of like a small thrill to me that everybody hears a different one. That I think part of it is that we didn't try to like jump over the Grand Canyon and just go like, let's reinvent Howlin' Rain. It was, you know, there was a little bit after, you know, a decade and a half, you know, you have the opportunity to feel like you can look back over what you've done, use some of that language, look at the past of the band, let some of those past geographies in this universe you created, let them be in a record, and it can still be a new record and still be new ground, but new experiences and places that you've been already. And I think that's one of the reasons that thing that you say comes up a little bit, you know, that we do reference different moments in this, you know, that we wanted to try to embrace the overarching history of the group in this without it just being a retrospective endeavor, you know.
I think too, your influences come out significantly more in this record than they may have in the past. I hear Stones, I hear Graham Parsons, I hear Pink Floyd to a certain degree. It's a Bob Seger. Even there was a moment where I thought, wow, that was very, I think it was an Under the Wheels actually, where I thought, wow, that's a very Bob Seger type moment. There's a lot of what?
Oh, I haven't thought about really referencing Bob Seger for a while, but I mean, I love him so essentially.
Yeah. Yes.
that voice and his thing and everything. It's just, yeah, that's, you know.
There's a lot of classic rock to this, but you make it your own. And that's a credit, I think, to the players on this band and the songs themselves. First of all, your writing has always been outstanding. Your lyrical writing has always been top notch, but I'm really impressed with the players on this band and being so cohesive. And as you said, these songs ruminated on stage before you got them down. So all of the players must have really known them before you put them down on tape.
Yeah, we did. I mean, that's something we want to do. I mean, the Alligator Bride was when this band first, that's the record before this one.
Yes.
Band first got together, at least right when Justin Smith, our drummer, had first joined the group. Dan and Jeff and I had been out for, you know, a year or so already together. And that was that snapshot. That was our kind of Two Nights the Night record, where we sort of wrote it in a few weekends, recorded it in one day and a half blast. And listening back, it sounds pretty raw and energetic. And for us, the natural thing was we just did that, you know, or 2 years ago we did it. You know, let's see what we've got here. We all like to go detailed on things. Let's try to take each one of these parts down and find its really essential feel, find its really essential groove. Not just, you know, good enough, you know, count it off, you know. It's like, and I think, you know, in doing that, all of us, you know, as a group and individually, you learn about, you know, learn a lot about what, you know, you can do to be your best for an album's songs, you know, while you're doing that kind of stuff. You are doing a lot of thinking as well as a lot of, you know, playing and stuff. It's not just, you know, running on adrenaline and instinct. So, and the band is, they're great players. They sound great because they are great. And then you take that kind of time and effort with it and hopefully just show the very best that you can do.
Were Scarlett Rivera and Adam McDougall around for the live stuff, or were they only around for the sessions that they specifically were part of?
No, they just came in for the sessions, you know. I mean, it could be said that, you know, Adam and I, you know, have been rubbing elbows for the last, you know, 10 years or whatever that CRB was going, spending a lot of time in backstages, sides of stages. He's seen Alan Rean many, many times, and I've seen or played with him many times. So between us, there was a known relationship and a known, you know, quality and quantity and you know, he knew what the deal was. Scarlett, you know, I sent her some music and she heard it and said, oh, I love this music. It's my kind of jams. And she came into the studio, but that was not a previous relationship.
Tell me about Annabelle, because it is my favorite song on the record by far. I'm a sucker for love songs. Who's it about? Who is Annabelle?
Yeah, I'm not going to give away that kind of, you know, specific, uh-huh, because I just don't do it in songwriting, even fair, if I knew.
Fair. No?
And, but I will say that part of the reason I don't do that is because it may be someone to you already. And it may be someone to everybody else whose favorite song it is, or even in passing, like the sting of like, you know, wow, this song was written like about this. How can that be? You know? And I feel like you go like, nah, that's my second wife. That's all, you know, it's second wife, you know, and it was a terrible divorce or whatever. Like by the time I got done writing that song, I hated her, you know, and it was like, okay, it's set in stone. We know, you know. So I don't like to, you know, I don't like to take anything away from somebody else's engagement. You know, to me, that's where that last bit of song, you know, happens. That's where there's still this creative end left open where, you know, you listen to it. And if things have been left open enough and it's not just feel like making love, like, I get it. I get what the song's about. You know, I get where it takes place and what it means, you know. But on songs that are open enough that you're like, man, I have never stopped engaging with this song, you know, never stopped engaging with its resonance, what it means to me, who it reminds me of, the smells that I smell when I hear it, you know, that I don't want to dampen that stuff. And that song in particular seems like a favorite of people so far. Scarlett, when I played it for her, she I'm not sure that she totally would have done. You know, I was like, let me, I think I got a song for you, Scarlett. You know, I think you're going to like our kind of music. It's probably up your alley, but here's the song. And she's like, you know, damn, I love that. You know,
yeah.
Definitely. You know, and that, I mean, that was awesome. Because maybe she would have done it even if she didn't love it. But I loved that she loved it. You know, and I love that other people have taken to it like that, you know.
Does Don't Let the Tears Come Off as a boogie song, as a dance song, if our friend Adam McDougall doesn't join in with all his madcap zaniness?
Yes, it does. It was written as, you know, no matter what, it was written as like a 1978, you know, that feel. And I Jeff, you know, ironically, would always throw in these little disco licks on bass.
Yeah, there's a lot of wah and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, where I'd be like, don't put that in there in this rock song, damn it. Like, when we get into this part, like, not throw that little dum-dip lick in there. Like, don't do that, man. Like, I want to hear that. It's like throwing me out when we're in the middle of this big rock thing and it sounds all jokey. And then we got through our disco song and I'm like, have at it, my friend. You know, just disco that. You can pop the strings. You could do all the illegal things that everybody told you not to do at the rock session. Let's funk it up, you know?
Yeah.
And he, like, I had to just drag that bass line out of him, you know, the kind of like funkier, you know? And so, yes, it did. That's just to paint the irony of what happens in groups, you know, in the inner discussions about things and the weird way people mess with each other in groups. But it was always funky, but you know, it never could have been that damn funky, because you know, Adam brought in, you know, the clav, the mini Moog, basically.
Yeah,
I wanted to hear, I don't even think I referenced this to him, I mean, I wanted to hear Stevie Wonder, Inner Visions level stuff. And mm-hmm. You don't need to make that reference to Adam. He sat down, he started rolling tracks. Oh, want, you know, Hilt's, now he's going to move over the clap. Now, oh, you know, let me just take a run through on the, you know, the mini Moog. Let me take another, you know, stacking them up. And, you know, that song was just, it was a joy to listen to him overdub on. It was a joy to record it. And then I did the editing of his takes. Like, he just ran through improvised takes through it. And then I had 25 tracks to edit together and stuff. And listening back to each of those and editing them into a cohesive thing was an absolute joy, you know.
Was Dharma Wheel, the song, always intended to be this 16-minute piece? Was it always intended to be a suite, as it were? Or were there a few songs that you've kind of pieced together?
It started out as a little bit more of a mini epic. Like, it just, it had the beginning. It didn't have the big, like, funky, like, Pink Floyd Pompeii breakdown part. It just kind of broke down and built back up again, you know. So it was a 8-minute song, kind of epic by most people's standards. But no, I think, you know, we, since I'd had that song for a while, you know, the idea, probably the temptation was too great to say, well, if we're going to bring it back, let's really put some work into it. And at the time, we thought we were working on like a triple album or whatever. So we're like, it can house anything. We can do a song that's 50 minutes long if we want to on a triple album and stuff. So, you know, we didn't really set those boundaries on ourselves for times. We just, that kind of intricate, sweet, like, songwriting, the longer form, it made sense to all four of us. So we didn't set boundaries on ourselves to, you know, like on Alligator by Law, that I think intentionally was like, let's, you know, bust out some, you know, 5-minute songs that, you know, kind of rip through. And you know, this time the rule kind of was like, there are no rules, let's just find what seems like the most natural thing for the four of us, even if in the end it's just the four of us that love that thing, you know.
Was channeling Steve Winwood difficult for that, for the vocal performance?
Do you think the vocal is
Steve some Winwood? Of it? Yeah, some of it was very Steve Winwoody, Winwoodish.
It was. The only thing I can say that's a little difficult about it is just singing some of the higher stuff in
E. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I like I don't know. That one was kind of a natural one to sing. And I changed the chorus at the last minute. And I thought that I had kind of done the chorus vocal, like a little, like something Stevie Wonder might do, you know, not quite that, you know, deeply R&B or anything, but just some of the like sort of inflections of it and stuff. But that makes sense with the Steve Winwood thing. I love Steve Winwood. Actually, I didn't listen to Traffic or Steve Winwood much on this record. I got kind of minorly obsessed with Traffic after this record.
Interesting.
I think combination of some of that singing, some of that not over the top fuzz guitar leads, yeah, and then Adam's piano stuff, especially on Dharma Wheel, when you hear that piano, you're like, okay, Traffic, you know.
And by the way, I don't bring up any of these bands to discredit you or the rest of the band's performance or abilities or any of that. I'm just giving it as a reference point to other people who have not yet heard the record, who will want to hear the record after I point out some of these reference points, because they're everything that you want in a band. I mean, they're all the sounds that you want to hear over and over again. That's why we love those bands. And so it's great that you've been able to capture some of the essence of those bands and bring them forward in some of your own work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't take any offense to that. We, you know, listen, any band that comes on here and tells you like, oh, Ira, you know, we don't reference anything. We are really to ourselves. Like, well, first of all, I guarantee you that's not true. There's no communication without the commonality of the things. You may do experiments in the studio where we say, nobody reference anything, don't think about anything, try to play like you've never played music before, any of these things. But still, you know, it's all a transfer of energy. It's all a transfer of, you know, a celebration of influences, a communication of our commonalities and the music that we love between each other as musicians and from fans to musicians and back. And there's no putting up a front in 2021 that you live in a cave and have invented this wheel. You know, right? What I mean? Music is, you know, that's from the first note that some caveman that really lived in a cave, you know, struck the goat intestine and it resonated a certain way. And we heard the first note of music. And from ever on, we've simply been carrying on that knowledge, you know? So, you know, I just went down a big philosophical rabbit hole, but nah, it's, you know, we're all here because we love music and these things are all valid, you know?
You tightened it all up in the studio, but you're going back out on the road, obviously going to perform many of these songs without McDougal with you and without, you know,
Scarlett
with you. It's not going to be the same. And yet you're going to want it to feel like it is the same, right? I mean, that's the attempt when you go back out and play these songs live.
Well, you know, another interesting faction of that is we're going out with a new band. Justin, the drummer, and I are still there from the Dharma Wheel band, but during the long, you know, year and a half of COVID, you know, two of the guys went on to other pastures. So in some ways that helps us because we have new bass player, new guitarist, Kyra Wilcox and Jason Soda, and they bring a certain perspective to the album and the way that they learned it and they brought it in the way that we all learn it as a new band, that I think in some ways, I don't know, it does something natural to our desire to represent the album and also naturally be able to do it in a way that's fresh to us because it's not the original four players and we can't just go back and mimic that. People have to create new expressions to do this stuff. And since some of these songs, Scarlett and Adam created very important parts to them, it's been a natural process to take those parts and try to, you know, reestablish them, reconnect them to either the guitars or how we, you know, deal with that stuff. So
I know that you're a prolific songwriter and that you're always working on stuff. Is there more? You mentioned that this originally you thought about making like a multi-disc record or a multi-volume record of Dharma Bums. Is there more stuff of Dharma Wheel? Sorry. sorry to reference Kerouac, silly me. Is there more opportunity to hear more of the stuff from this period, from this chunk?
I think, you know, now that we've got the new band, we got to just get one COVID tour in and right. say, okay, you know, we made it through that. Just 6 months ago, the idea of trying to, you know, do any of this stuff was difficult. And each step that each band that you see out there doing anything is such, it seems like, oh, cool, they went and played a club gig, but it's such a big effort and such a hard, foggy, you know, dark corridor to navigate as we aren't really out of the, you know, we're trying to get. So all that said, yes, we'll see what happens. But basically we had basically tracked everything for that epic over 2 hour album or whatever it was going to be. And then COVID hit. And as it turned, you know, I had to stop and say, okay, this, you know, it was really expensive making an album that's that much material and whatnot. And we were constantly on the road then. So I was just siphoning a bit of money out of each of these tours, pumping it straight in the studio, or we're taking days off on the tour and just hitting the studio on the road. And it all made for a very fluid funding of a very expensive record. COVID happens, all that comes to a stop, and you're like, here, there's what's in the, you know, in the label bank account or something, like, all right, you know, I basically got a finished record ready to go if I cut this thing in half or pull these songs. So, you know, that kind of said, you know, I broke it down and I like, you know what, this sounds like a fantastic record on its own. We can still release the second volume if it makes sense. They can still be sister albums or whatever it is. It can make sense as a whole once they're both out. But thankfully, it, you know, it was not just half of a rock opera or something. It was like, this is, there's something about this record that you can hear around the edges, maybe, that you're like, this seems like it's part of a bigger thing, but I don't think that distracts from it being, you know, cool in its own right, or just functioning as its own thing.
Totally agreed. I love it. That's the only reason I'm asking for more. I mean, I'm going to give this is going to get a lot of spinach time, but you always want more, right? Everybody always wants more. Dude, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate the record, as I've mentioned 1,000 times already. And can't wait to hear more and see more online. So thanks for taking the time, dude. Really appreciate it.
Awesome, Meyer. It's good to talk to you again, man.
For more on Howlin' Rain, visit howlinrain.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Dharma Wheel. Here is Under the Wheels. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.